The following podcast is scheduled for one fall. One fall!
It's almost time for a new chapter of Geek Catch-Up to start. But before it does, Chris and I wanted to take a moment to send our love and appreciation out to all of you for choosing to hang out with us. If you enjoy Geek Catch-Up, then make sure to slam that subscribe button and help us level up the show by leaving a review on your favorite podcast platform.
You can also find us on social media to get updates on all things GK, interact directly with us, and content from the world of geekery. Geek Ketchup Podcast on Facebook and YouTube, at Geek Ketchup Pod on Instagram and Twitter, links to all of which can be found in the show notes below and on our website, geekketchuppodcast.com.
If you'd like to support the shoe, there's even links to our Square shop where you can find official GK merchandise like shirts and stickers. And Patreon, if extra content is your thing. Above all, though, the absolute best thing you can do is spread the love for the world of geekery by sharing the Geek Catch-Up podcast with your friends and family.
Now get ready to enjoy today's show, and as always, remember to stay saucy.
If it's nerdy, we're into it.
Gaming, movies, television, wrestling, comics, whatever. We are Kyle Eckert and Chris Heck, two lifelong friends with a passion for the world of geekery.
And this is the Geek Catch-Up Podcast.
Welcome back, Geek Catch-Up family. I'm Chris Heck.
And I'm Kyle Eckert.
Today we're continuing Season 3 by returning to the mutant island of Krakoa for Chapter 52. It's been a little more than a year since we discussed the happenings and fallout of the X of Swords event, but with so much occurring in the world of X, we felt it was time to highlight the X-Men once again. A lot happened throughout the various mutant titles in 2021, with big moments like the Hellfire Gala, colonization of Mars and the planet-sized X-Men, the announcement of Jonathan Hickman's impending departure, and the recently concluded Inferno miniseries. Kyle and I are here to catch you up on as much as we can by sharing our favorite moments from the titles we follow, providing an in-depth discussion of Inferno, and what the behind-the-scenes shakeup means for the future of the X-Men for both Marvel and Geek Ketchup. So let's start with some of the best moments in the time between our last discussion around when the Hellfire Gala and Planet-Sized X-Men were released and the start of the Inferno event. So which books or moments really stood out to you, Kyle?
I think far and away, the best book individual was Planet Size X-Men. So much happened. The status quo of Krakoa and the colonization of Mars and the Omega Mutants totally flexing and terraforming Mars, establishing it as their planet, is definitely the best single issue, I think, for me. And then series-wise, I would say it was the new X-Men series that kind of came out of the Hellfire Gala and the establishment of the new team and the new location with the tree in New York and all of that. Like, a lot of other things happened that were really cool in the other series that I was reading, and that being Way of X and Marauders, X-Force, Trial of Magneto, and then coming out of Way of X, also the Onslaught revelation. So, like, that was all cool. But for me, if it comes down to, like, one series or one particular issue, it's got to be the X-Men series and then the Planet Size X-Men single issue.
Yeah, that's pretty hard to argue, because Planet Size X-Men was maybe the most impactful single issue that we saw since going all the way back to maybe House of X and Powers of Ten itself, you know, when we really got that initial introduction to the island nation of Krakoa and what was about to happen. You know, Planet really did take it to the next level.
Yeah, oh yeah. Well, I'd say, like, the way Hoxpox totally revolutionized the mutant culture. Like, if you needed to wrap that up into a single issue, it would be Planet Size.
Yeah, and it's definitely going to have really, really long-lasting, you know, ripple effects through not only the world of the mutants, but probably the Marvel comic universe as well. So super cool there. And then X-Men, like you said, I mean, I was really not so sure about how the X-Men reboot was going to go, but to your point, like, reading through the first six issues, I mean, every one was really solid.
And I feel like it finally hit those expectations that I had for the original X-Men series coming out of Hoxpox.
Yeah.
Because, like, I remember the theme of that original series that was going to be written by Hickman himself was going to be this rotating cast where they do single stories and they go off and do little things and then come back. And you never know who you're going to get week to week. You never know what they're going to see. And it never quite got there. It just seemed to be this kind of patchworked series. You got a really good issue. I know that like X-Men number 4 stands out when Xavier and Magneto and Gorgon all go to the UN summit. Like those stick out. But then there were a lot of like really kind of awkward issues like horticulture and other things like that. This series gave us not necessarily the rotating cast as far as mutants go, but the one-shot stories almost that they told, like individual unique threats to the either New York as a city or the planet as a whole, and the X-Men are there to deal with it, was really, really well done.
Yeah, I definitely liked it a whole lot more. It was just more entertaining.
Yeah.
You know, really, all around, it was just more entertaining. And so that was a really, really strong kind of comeback when, like I said, I was not excited about that at all. Not that I was, like, bummed that the other X-Men that they were doing, you know, was going away because it wasn't that great, but, like, just wasn't super excited about the team and just the whole nine yards and the reboot. You know, it's just, like, my whole vibe on it was down going into it. And then as soon as I got through, you know, issue one or two, it just completely shifted, you know, keeping that on the pull list, you know, probably for the next little while, at least to see where that goes. So I can't really argue with you on either of those. I will say, though, that for myself, I was thinking, you know, leaning towards the X-Men, but ultimately I had to give some love to what I have found to be probably the best, most consistent of the titles that I've been checking out since we started with the Dawn of X, and that is Excalibur.
Yeah.
I mean, Excalibur 22 to 26 just crushed it all, you know, to end that line. And I was really, really loving it. I couldn't put them down.
Yeah, and that one came out strong because it was definitely the focal point of X of Swords.
Yeah.
You couldn't get around it. Like, X of Swords was all about Otherworld, which came directly from Excalibur. And I knew that you were big on it from the beginning. And as how we pick up our comics, I would get to flip through it before I send it to you. And I was always like, oh man, there's a lot of cool stuff happening here. But I was never fully reading it because I wanted to get your take on it. And that was it. And I know that you've enjoyed the magical realm and the team was always really cool.
Yeah, really great team. Very cool themes. You know, we had a lot of apocalypse early on, which really helped. But it kept that strength. It really just kept getting better, you know, all the way through X of Swords, like you mentioned, and then coming back here for essentially what, you know, is going to end up being the last four issues. But, you know, in issue 23, you get Dr. Doom showing up front and center, you know, requesting travel to Otherworld from the Excalibur team. And he ends up getting taken to the Crooked Market for kind of this whole little mini adventure. So that was super cool. You know, everybody knows I'm a big Doom guy, so it was kind of this nice little crossover that worked out.
Yeah.
And then at the end of that, there was actually kind of a big revelation that we find out that Merlin has had King Arthur under his control. So, like, Arthur was kind of been mentioned, but was nowhere to be found. Like, nobody truly knew where he was.
Yeah.
And the end there of 23, there's, like, this huge revelation that, you know, King Arthur essentially is getting activated by Merlin to go after the Excalibur team and Saturnine. But they also reveal that King Arthur believes that his son, Mordred, is actually a mutant.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. Yeah.
Nice little plot twist.
Yeah. So some interesting stuff there. And then literally, you know, issues 24, 25, and 26 are pretty much like a nonstop six-man tag match between Arthur, Merlin, and some of the forces that they've gathered from Otherworld. So like the Savali vampires, like, you know, some of the other actual like civilizations have joined up with them. And then they take on essentially Team Excalibur, the Captain Britain Corp, and the forces of the Starlight Citadel. So literally it's just like these, like the last three issues are just this giant ongoing battle and just really, really crazy moments. Couldn't put it down, had to keep reading. And the only downfall was that because of what everything's going on with Marvel right now, was that it just ended on this huge cliffhanger.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh my God, I was like, I need more, because literally things get desperate. Betsy gets all of her people back safely to Krakoa and they think that they're going to stay over there and kind of regroup. And her being just as brave as she is and just the leader she is, she pretty much like teleports herself back to Otherworld by herself to defend Saturnine and like take on Arthur and all these people and Camelot. But that's it.
Yeah.
She leaves. The issue ends. We have no idea what's going to happen. And it was just so well done. It was a nice bow on how good pretty much issues 1 through 26 were. And so I had to give it the love here.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And when we get, I think, to the end of this chapter, we're going to talk about the future X books. And we'll see if Betsy's story gets continued. I know that you sent me a text almost immediately like, I have to know what's going to happen.
Right.
And like, that's comics. Like, you just never know sometimes. Like, series get ended and they usually go out with a bang when the creators know they're being ended. So maybe we'll see it picked back up in the future. And could be in 3 months, could be in 2 years, could never happen. And fans will just be really sad. That's just the nature of the comic business sometimes. So we will certainly have to see if that gets revisited later down the line in the future of X. But it's interesting that you talked about Merlin finding out that his son was a mutant, because that ends up being kind of a key feature, not necessarily specific to Merlin. And you said Merlin, right? Merlin's son.
No, not Merlin's son. King Arthur's son.
Oh, Arthur's son. Excuse me. Arthur's son. So that ends up being a key feature in Trial of Magneto.
Oh, okay, okay.
Which was not necessarily King Arthur's son specifically, but in Trial of Magneto, it's this spin-out of the Hellfire Gala that at the end of the gala, Wanda Maximoff is found dead.
Right.
And they do a short little 5-issue mini that's called The Trial of Magneto because he's the prime suspect of the killer of the Scarlet Witch. And it's a phenomenal little mini-series. It's done by Leah Williams and Lucas Vernick and Edgar Delgado, and it's basically a continuation of the X-Factor line that I was reading, where X-Factor was investigating mutant deaths. So, like, obviously the mutants have resurrection protocols, so death isn't permanent, but that still doesn't mean that they don't investigate how the person died.
Right.
And so it was all about North Star and the X-Factor team kind of investigating Wanda's death. And it was awesome because it was this crossover with the Avengers as well.
Oh, because okay. Nice.
Obviously, Wanda is an Avenger right now. So, like, Cap and Iron Man and Vision and Wasp, they're all there, too. So there's some cool little interactions as they're on Krakoa. But the reason it impacts or is impacted by Excalibur so much is actually at the end of it all, Wanda comes back to life. You find out that Wanda essentially killed herself in so many ways and merged multiple timelines of herself to make this one nexus point so she could do this astral plane business.
Oh, shit.
And
oh,
break shit. Into the multiverse.
Wow, okay. This is getting serious.
Because what they found out was in this timeline, there's only so many mutants because of the multiverse. You might be a mutant here, but you're not a mutant in another timeline. So what she does is at the end of it all, she opens up the astral plane so that if you were a mutant in any multiverse situation, you have the opportunity to be a mutant here.
Whoa, that's crazy.
Combined with the magical elements of Excalibur and Merlin and King Arthur and such, I wonder if those two played off each other where maybe he wasn't a mutant in this life, but in a multiverse he was, and now he is a mutant.
It's possible because they actually have moments of dialogue or narration throughout the Excalibur issues there where, like, people, other characters from Otherworld talk about the tales that have been told about King Arthur or their interactions with him over time. And he's described in like a whole number of different ways. Some is like, you know, very heroic and virtuous and everything, you know, like that. Others are, he's a madman, you know, kind of driven by his own paranoia. And, you know, so they talk about essentially all these different versions, and they never 100% confirm that his son Mordred is a mutant. But they say that many believe he's a mutant, but they kind of set up this situation where, like, it could be any number of possibilities.
Oh.
But this, at least this particular version of Arthur, he believes this prophecy that his kid is a mutant and that he will die from his kid. So, like, he essentially wages war on his son and the witch breed, they call him, but, like, the mutants. And it's all because of the X gene and this prophecy that Arthur believes in this world.
Nice.
But to your point, it could actually kind of be something like that. And they never came out and said it in Excalibur.
Right.
But, you know, hearing that part, because I didn't read Trial of Magneto and all that, you know, you kind of put one and one together or whatever. And that could be a good hypothesis there.
Yeah. And you never know. At the end of Trial of Magneto, she opened up a portal to allow those who want to be mutants to walk through. And it's so very open-ended. I think all of these books ended in kind of a conclusion, but also very open for future stories.
Right.
And so you never know what could spin out of that. But as soon as you said that and he didn't know, I was like, ooh, magical realm. This happened with Wanda. Like, yeah, and you know that they go on retreats, like the X-Line writers and creative teams go on retreats, and they basically do the Charlie from It's Always Sunny and plot out all the lines on a big whiteboard and how they're going to cross over and where you're going to see people. So I have no doubt, or at least I hope, maybe I shouldn't say I have no doubt that they planned it. I hope that that was organized in that fashion for that reason.
Very possibly could be.
But I know, I was reading a few other books as well, Way of X, Marauders, X-Force. I'll skim over those pretty quickly because I think they all ended in kind of like an anticlimactic kind of aspect to it, because I think they're going to continue on. And I think they all were headed in one direction. And then Marvel broke the news about Hickman stepping away as a writer, and they were going to have to shift. So a lot of the stories, especially in X-Force, where they, in the early issues, like the early 20 issues, they were starting to tell these stories about Quentin and his relationship with Phoebe and like the Cuckoos, one of the Cuckoos. And then there was some Colossus business happening and Wolverine was doing his thing. And like X-Force, they were like building these stories. And then there was a very definitive about shift, like, Total shift in where the story was going, and almost felt like this rushed ending. And all of them had very similar vibes, maybe with the exception of Way of X, because Way of X was about Nightcrawler and investigating the religion,
sure,
a mutant religion, and how that would impact. The final piece to that one was really interesting because Onslaught shows up, who is a psychic entity that is both Magneto and Xavier combined.
Ooh, that's pretty sweet.
Onslaught's like an old school villain.
Yeah, yeah, I've been around for a while.
From back in the day. But it was a unique twist because Onslaught was finding himself, inserting himself into the brains of the reborn mutants. And he slipped in during the time that they were dead.
Whoa.
So if like a mutant dies on Monday, gets resurrected on Thursday, what happens to Tuesday and Wednesday?
Interesting, yeah.
And Onslaught was finding his way into their minds during that time. And a lot of that kind of like, it was a heavy book. He was working with Legion. It was a little all over the place. But they weren't as strong, I'll say, as Trial of Magneto and as of X-Men. It kind of sounds like Excalibur went out with a bang. Highlight moment out of Marauders would be Iceman, who after terraforming Mars, basically is like, well, what else can I do? And realizes like, I'm an Omega mutant, but I've always kind of like kept myself in check.
Yeah.
Well, what else can I do with my powers? And he goes ballistic. To the point where at the end of the series, he leaves the series because he wants to go figure out what all he can do. And the final shot is him in Niflheim fighting the Frost Giants.
Whoa.
By himself and just wrecking them and just totally wrecking them.
That's so crazy.
That was pretty cool.
Why don't you go solve global warming, Bobby Drake?
Oh, he's talking about it.
Ah, okay. Okay.
Yeah. You know. Nope. That's part of it. He's like, he's full on being like, I'm not sure what the extent of my powers are, and so I'm going to go flex. He fights off. So do you know Fin Fang Foo?
Yeah, yeah.
The giant dragon?
Yeah.
He shows up, and Iceman just like makes himself a giant.
Whoa.
And starts just fighting him by himself. And at one point, Fin Fang Foo, like, melts him down. And he's like, Iceman, like, I breathe fire. Who are you? And Bobby just reforms himself.
Nice.
Like, it was pretty wild. Like, on several occasions, he gets stabbed through the heart. And you think he's going to die, but he's in his ice form, so he doesn't.
That's crazy. It's almost like the writers were just like, hey, we've had him locked in a box for 40 years, so let's yeah. open him up a little bit.
Well, and that's kind of how one of the issues starts, is him being like, I haven't been able to sleep since Mars, because my brain can't stop, you know, trying to figure out what I can do.
Unlimited power.
Yeah, yeah. Were you reading any other X books?
So had Wolverine, right? And that had some interesting moments. You know, I thought it was going to get a little bit better when it got into all the Solemn stuff and really kind of gave us more background on Solemn, you know, because he was one of our favorite characters from X of Swords. And there was definitely some good issues in there. I thought that there was a lot of meaty information, and there's still probably more to come with Solemn and the history of the mutants, you know, or say the future of the mutants. But, you know, it just didn't end up being like quite the end-to-end work that I thought Excalibur ended up being. And so, you know, I figured it wasn't quite as highlightable, even though there was probably some good moments. You know, Wolverine's always just got good moments here and there, like
yeah.
stuff that's going to be entertaining. But I'm still kind of uncertain on that one, all in all, you know, because it almost has a little bit of that issue that the original X-Men had, you know, where it's got a couple good issues that have kind of a working together storyline, and then you get this random, you know, random issue tucked in there, and then it'll come back and it'll have some storyline going, and then it'll go kind of left field. And so while it's not quite as one-off every time as the original X book was, I think it kind of falls somewhat into that. And so, you know, I preferred just the continuity issue to issue of like Excalibur versus a little bit of the randomness of Wolverine.
Sure. And see, and I had figured he was going to get maybe a boost because of the X lives of Wolverine and X deaths of Wolverine that's happening. That's the true closure to what is now known as the Reign of X.
Yeah.
Before we move into, so there was the Dawn of X, the Reign of X, and then moving forward is going to be the Destiny of X. And I was thinking that transition being a Wolverine-based story, maybe they juice up his stories a little bit.
Yeah, I thought the Solemn stuff was just going to go longer. You know, I thought that was going to be maybe like a whole like six-issue arc or something like that. And it ended up being like two issues. And they kind of backed off. You know, it just seemed like that was important enough that maybe it could have been a little bit longer-term conflict or storytelling. And it didn't go that route. So, I mean, I still enjoyed it. Him taking out the giant whale, Leviathan, with, like, the Kraken tongue and all that stuff, you know, was pretty cool. And there was definitely some moments in there. You know, it was, like, very Jaws-ish, right? Like, that whole issue was very Jaws of him setting sail and, you know, tracking down this giant sea creature and all that stuff. But it just didn't have the full issue-to-issue. And it felt like it went a little squirrely there up to, I think, issue 19. Whereas I would have almost expected it to do a little more to set up the 10 lives of Wolverine. So I guess we'll have to see. I'll probably pick that one up as a trade, so I'm not going to read it right away. But, you know, maybe going back and piecing them together, I would feel differently. But just kind of reading it in a vacuum, that's how I felt.
Right. Super random question. If at any point did he show up with a adamantium surfboard?
I don't think so.
Okay.
I don't think
Forged. So. Definitely made him a surfboard made of adamantium.
Whoa.
And he went surfing.
No.
In one of the final issues of X-Force.
Wouldn't that just sink? How is that buoyant? That makes no sense.
I don't know, but he used it as a surfboard and as a weapon, and it was pretty cool.
Nah, that's pretty wild.
Each series certainly took a different approach to their soft ending, but I think it's fair to say that they each had their highlight moments. Up next, we'll do our deep dive into Inferno, Jonathan Hickman's final story as he leaves main writing duties on the X line.
Hey, fellow geeks, did you know that the Geek Ketchup Podcast has a merchandise store? Go to geekketchuppodcast.com and click merch in the menu to add official GK shirts, stickers, and more to your inventory. Stay saucy, you nerds. There will be an island. Not the first, but the last. Promises were made. Promises were broken. The rulers of Krakoa have been playing a dangerous game with a dangerous woman, and they are about to see how badly that can burn them. Mastermind of the X-Men, Jonathan Hickman, brings his plans to a head as one woman follows through on her promise to burn the nation of Krakoa to the ground. Inferno unfolded across four oversized issues and took readers another step towards the curious destiny that awaits the mutants one way or another at the end of all of this. We see all the work of Charles and Eric unraveling as they become more desperate from being outsmarted multiple times and their alliances crumbling. Trust is at a premium amongst the Quiet Council, and the little that may have existed between some of the most powerful mutants on Earth is going up in flames. This series was highly anticipated as a penultimate moment for the Hickman era, and it definitely was efficient at answering questions, raising stakes, and progressing the story in a way that should provide the next wave of the creative team a whole lot of freedom. We won't necessarily be breaking down every moment of every issue, but let's dive into things here, Kyle. Did Inferno live up to the hype for you, or did it crash and burn?
I don't think it crashed and burned by any means. I will say that I don't know if it had like the overall just hype that I had from Hoxpox.
Sure.
You know, like coming out of House of X, Powers of 10, like back in 2019, it was just so good.
Right.
It was just every single moment, every single panel, every single second was just this insane development. And so I can't say that it did that, but I also think it was a very fitting goodbye for Jonathan Hickman. And that also set up a wide open future for mutant kind.
Yep, 100%. To me, it was more so the height of Hoxpox. And then, you know, we went into X of Swords.
Right.
Just super stoked. Like, I fully expected, I think we both did, for that event to really be on the same level as Hoxpox. And it was good, but it wasn't quite there.
Right.
So coming back over here, I think that really is what tempered me down, because I just, you know, that balance of the crazy hype to, okay, X of Swords didn't quite get there. This will probably be somewhere in the middle. And I think I came out on the other end liking it a whole lot because of how it tied everything up and the way it unfolded. I thought that it was a really kind of well way, to your point, of just putting the bow on this 3-year running overarching story.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It was, I don't want to come across that I didn't enjoy it and it didn't have just phenomenal moments, because you're right. It was definitely really well written and well pieced out, and the various twists and turns and betrayals throughout the whole thing were all perfectly executed. I think, you know, and the art was impeccable as always. Like, that's just been one constant throughout all of the X books over the years, is just they each have their own look and feel, so it's still really, really good.
Right.
I just think, I you know, it's an ending. It's really hard to end things. And I think for me, that's just where it got caught up.
Yeah, you definitely run into that, like, how do you perfectly end something, especially something that's, like, both ending and not ending at the same time, because,
yeah,
it's like, the Hickman era is coming to a close here, but, like, X-Men, of course, are going to continue on with a lot of what has been built here. For me, I think what really got it was I liked how they worked in the sections of events that we saw in the previous issues, and then kind of panned back, gave you that wider zoom, so that way you could see the additional context or some of the reveals of like what actually was happening or what the individual characters ended up doing beyond what we were shown originally, whether it was the moments with Douglas when he was building Krakoa or the stuff with Mystique. Like, you know, I just thought that was really cool how they were able to work in and kind of circle us back to some of those moments that I remember specifically being like, okay, you know, that was kind of a cool moment, or you make a little mental note of something, but you don't really know what it means. And then it's just like, oh, that's what was happening.
Oh yeah. And I definitely want to talk about Cypher, because I think Doug had a great, great twist and piece to this whole, you know, puzzle that is Krakoa. But I will agree there. I think one of the highlights of the first issue is them talking about, You know, we saw them try to attack the orchestration back in House of X Powers of Ten. We saw all that go down, and it was nice to find out that while we've been reading these other X books over the years, they have been continuing to do just attempts on that station to get, break into it, find out what's going on. And I think the data page showed up to like 13.
I did as 16. Or, I think
yeah,
13
to 16. Yeah, there was like 13 specific ones and then three kind of offshoots.
Right,
that
that's
weren't,
what it was. Yeah.
Weren't like a mutant team that got sent. And like that was really cool, being like, okay, this, while we haven't necessarily been seeing it, it's very believable to think that they keep sending strike teams
right,
to try to figure out what's going on up there. And that was really, really cool. So I agree with you there. Like seeing these isolated panels and then blowing, you know, taking the 30-foot view of it and being like, whoa, this is how it impacts everything.
Yeah. Yeah. Most of the first issue of Inferno wasn't too like, oh my God. You know, that was a really cool part to see. I thought that kind of put things more in context. And then it was like just a bunch of little tidbits, you know, like they reveal that there's this alliance between Orcus and Horticulture,
right?
You know, who have both been at odds with the X-Men. And then they show us, you know, some of those parts between Moira and Charles and Eric, you know, really kind of upping the ante on wanting Destiny, you know, erased forever.
Right.
Bishop being named Captain Commander of the Krakoan forces. Like, it was just kind of like this little moment that was so easily to be like, oh, you know, forget about that. But I was like, damn, that's kind of a, like a big little shakeup, you know, if that makes sense, right?
Well, and that one specifically ties into what's happening in the X-Men line that we
right.
didn't talk about in the first piece, where like, basically Ben Ehrlich, who's a writer for the Daily Bugle, has figured out that the mutants can resurrect themselves. And so Cyclops has to publicly die and takes on this new persona as Captain Krakoa.
Right.
And that's like very interesting. And I also think that the fact that maybe because publicly he's dead, he can no longer serve as Captain or Commander Captain. You know, they didn't outright say it, but if like you piece one with the other, that all makes sense. I don't know. And I agree there. Like I call it like the chess piece moves that, a lot of things happen in that first. They were, you know, moving their pawns into place, setting
way.
Up the board
yep.
to kind of for this climactic ending that we saw all shake out in the, you know, 3 and 4.
Yeah. And that's what I was getting at, was like kind of the end of Inferno 1, right? It was like, it was just all these little pieces, but then they drop that bomb. You know, Eric and Charles think that they're going to be so smart. They think they're going to go and wipe Destiny off the map. And you even see these moments where they're doing essentially those things to walk that out. And then, boom, no, sir, Mystique comes in. And it shows the world that Destiny has already been resurrected. She brings her wife back. And so you kind of have that moment of like, oh, snap. Even Charles and Eric have no idea what's kind of going on really behind the scenes. And things are much more out of control than they seemed.
Oh, yeah. And that bleeds right into issue 2, where they give you basically how Mystique did it, how she fooled the Five into resurrecting Destiny and really playing Hope.
Yeah.
Playing Hope so well in getting them to resurrect Destiny, in getting one over on Xavier and Magneto by playing backroom politics with the rest of the council. And it was really cool because like I said, keeping that chessboard kind of metaphor going, if the first issue we saw the various pieces of the chess game being played, issue 2 was how we got to the table to play the game, and then issues 3 and 4 were the final executions.
Right, yeah, that's a good way to put it. I thought it was really funny just to see how pissed off, you know, Xavier and Magneto were in the second issue when they were talking to Moira and kind of sharing with her, like, yeah, you know, Destiny's already back. And she's like, well, go kill her right now. I think she says something like, she wears a metal helmet on her head, you know, and Magneto's like, don't think I can do that, you know?
So right,
you just see these very powerful people that are always so in control, just being completely out of control, and it was a cool dynamic. But to your point, seeing how everything came together was really the highlight of this for me, you know, reminding me of how really Mystique in her own way is an Omega level mutant. You know, she doesn't quite get the same credit there. She's so overlookable. And she even talks about that regularly, I think, sometimes in some of her moments is, you know, everybody wants to use her as a pawn or this and that. And then she just it was like page after page of her just playing everybody to a T. And you just really realize how dangerous she is, how calculated she is, how smart she is. And I was it like ticked her up another notch and like gave me that refresh on like, yeah, she's never been like my number one favorite by any means, but she's super freaking cool, you know?
Oh, yeah. Well, she instantly reminds you why for so many years she was Magneto's maybe right hand.
Exactly.
Like,
yep.
In certain stories, maybe not in every single story in every fashion, of course, but
more often than not, though, probably. I mean, she's kind you know, she's tied to Xavier too, but yeah, I think most people would recognize her more as Magneto's close friend or right-hand man, I think is a good way to put it.
Sure. And she's so much more than her powers.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like I know, like you said, like she's not an Omega level mutant as far as her abilities go, but her mind.
Right.
And how she plays the game is second to none.
And so it was kind of cool. We also saw here, after all that unfolds, you know, in kind of an act of desperation, right? You know, Charles and Eric, they go and they try to bring Emma Frost into the fold here, which was another moment that you at first you're kind of like, okay, didn't seem overly impactful. But at the end of the day, Emma's just like pretty much like, nope, you've destroyed this relationship with me. I no longer trust you. We may still work together, but our relationship is very different here moving on.
Oh, yeah.
And I thought that ended up being something that really played out in the later issues here.
Especially at the very end. I know we're talking about Inferno holistically here, so we don't need to just issue by issue it, but we'll say like at the very end of all of this, where Emma reveals the secrets that Xavier and Magneto have been keeping for, you know, in our lifetime, 2 years, to the rest of the council. Like, that's a huge moment.
Definitely set that up for a lot more transparency in the Krakoan government. And I thought that really was a moment that'll be very interesting to see how the new creative team takes it and what they could do. Because, yeah, I think that was one of those big open-ended moments that we were talking about earlier where they really could go in a million different ways now. You know, they're not really going to be locked into what we've seen for the last 2 years.
Oh, yeah. Well, and especially with the happenings of Moira.
Right.
And basically getting out of this trap that I think Hickman had, like, set early, and that all of this was happening during Moira's 10th life with her mutant ability of resurrection. Like, so there was this constant worry and almost, like, telegraphed, okay, well, how does the Hickman era end? Well, it's obviously going to end with Moira dying, because when Moira dies, that's going to be a reset to the X-Men universe, and we'll be back to whatever we want it to be. But with them stripping Moira of her mutant ability, then attempting to kill her so she can't resurrect, it's like, oh, that's a perfect way to keep this Krakoan era alive. And I really, really enjoyed that.
I totally agree there. And one thing kind of along those lines I think is worth pointing out, and I think we started to see it in Inferno 3, and then maybe it came fully to light in Inferno 4, was some of the stuff around Omega Sentinel.
Mm-hmm.
And there was obviously that super cool moment with Omega Sentinel and Nimrod and Charles and Magneto. I'm sure we'll maybe dive into that here in a bit. But with your side about Moira, they make it very clear that Omega Sentinel's history or lifespan and Moira's 10th life are actually very intertwined.
Yeah.
And there's even a couple like info pages there where they show, you know, the congruence of the timelines between the two of them and what's happening as Moira's 10th life unfolds and the Omega Sentinel really becomes what she is. And I actually think personally there's more to come there. I don't know if I would go so far as to predict that Moira is Omega Sentinel, but I think that there was just some interesting timeline situations there now with Moira being human. I don't know. I think there's stuff to come down the line a little bit there. But I just thought it was very interesting how all that worked out Omega Sentinel coming back in time as well from what she knew to help Nimrod. I don't know. It was a lot to unpack, but I just thought that that really left some open-ended questions.
When Moira definitely has the mechanical arm now, thanks to Warlock.
Well, right, yes. You know, like, there's just some like little tidbits there that if that circled back and somehow they were like, yeah, Moira changed her name and then became Omega Sentinel somehow. Like, I don't know if I'd be surprised. Like, I could see it, is I guess what I'm getting at now.
Or she gets modified to the point where she's no longer considered human.
Yeah. Well, what got me, right, well, there's that. And what got me was that there was that quote. So there's a specific quote from Omega Sentinel that I couldn't get away from. And, well, maybe it was two. Like, she said, in the future she is from, the mutants always win, which was very different from everything that we had seen leading up to it, where everybody expected that the mutants always lost. But she specifically said in there, she closed her eyes in mutant hell and opened them years ago here on Earth, ... all my days of a future past.
Yeah.
And maybe I've reading into it too much. Like, I did like the little nod to the other X-Men story, right?
Days of Future Past.
Kind of looking, it was like, you were in the mutant hell. Like, Moira was in this little mutant cell under Krakoa. She always was at odds with being a mutant herself, you know, and then she's out now. I don't know. Maybe I'm reading too much into it, but that's kind of where my brain was going, was that there's something here between the two of them.
Yeah, I could absolutely see how that could play out, you know, done right. If you piece it all together and the it's all there. Well, I'll say that, like, maybe not necessarily, but like we've said all along with all of these books and Inferno in itself, they've left it so open-ended. They've laid out these plot points, and this next wave of writers are really going to get to do whatever they want and pull from these various pieces and just make it happen.
I want like an Omega Sentinel 5-issue, you know, miniseries or something to like fully expose all the secrets there and everything that's gone on with her. But I thought that was super cool. And then, of course, you know, the way Inferno 3 ended with Mystique essentially just setting up this trap, stealing Moira, leaving it where Nimrod and Omega Sentinel come in. And of course, you know, we saw that she was orchestrating all of that to pretty much confront Magneto and Charles with Nimrod and Omega Sentinel. And you're just like, okay, issue 4 is about to get real.
Oh yeah. And it absolutely does. The battle that comes out of that is pretty amazing. Just from Jump Street, where Omega Sentinel and Nimrod have a whole basically platoon of soldiers.
Yes.
And opt to wipe them out themselves, being like, we don't need you, like humans. And I was like, wow, what a message that, like, if this whole story start to finish has been about mutants versus humans versus machines. And at the end of the day, the mutants and the machines are like, yeah,
yep,
humans are pointless here. You're worthless. And it was pretty remarkable.
Dude, not only did they wipe them out, they wipe them out in like an instant, like what they thought. They kill dozens and dozens and dozens of troops. And I even wrote it down here. Omega Sentinel's quote as soon as they did it was, this is how little you matter.
Yeah, that was funny. I just opened the book to find, I was like, she says something very significant. I'm glad you pulled that.
Yeah, I mean, the humans essentially are just, you see it in that moment that they're just outmatched. Like, they think they're on the side of the machines. You know, they think that it's like 2-1 in a handicap match against the mutants. But in that moment, she says that, and I think she followed it up with something to the effect of, like, the machines hate the mutants and the humans the same. Like, they hate both of them equally. They are not on either side. So it's like a true triple threat now.
Right.
Instead of this handicap match. Like, those I thought were big moments, because they also, those were moments that, like, go back deep in X-Men lore. Like, not just this Hickman era, but if you think about just the constant struggle between the mutants and the humans and the machines with the original Sentinels and all of that. Like, I thought that that was one of those moments in time that, like, okay, here's a revelation that spans, what, 40 or 50? I don't know. How long have the X-Men been around? 40 years? You know?
Yeah, much. Oh, 60.
60
plus,
years? I mean, yeah.
Yeah, so. 60. Yeah, they debuted. Well, it's awful that I feel like this is something I should know on command. But well before that, because you got to think they debuted in the 60s and stuff.
Okay, yeah, in 60 years. So that's how I looked at that. I was like, whoa. I was like, that's kind of a cool moment.
Yeah, 1963, first appearance of the X-Men.
Yeah, so going right on 60 years here.
Yeah, no, but I agree. Yeah, it's this constant struggle. And the themes of the X-Men and the mutant books over the years are definitely woven in to Inferno in itself. And it's what makes them such a joy to read, because it's not just your standard superhero comic. Like, there are obviously superhero elements with powers and abilities, but more times than not, it's a lot of like social issues baked in, political issues baked in, like all of that stuff. And it makes it, you know, relatable,
right?
And why we like it so much.
Yeah, I totally agree. You know, and then I think we also got to call out here, though, before we get away from that moment between Sentinel, Nimrod, Professor X, and Magneto. But we get a super awesome couple of panels where they have this fight.
Oh, yeah.
And it's not really like a knockdown, drag out, crazy fight. It's more like a couple key moments and then some really good dialogue. But it kind of starts out with Professor X getting so mad that he essentially like telekinetically blows Nimrod apart.
Right.
And like, I thought that was pretty epic. I was like, holy crap. Like, this is all going to change how this goes down. But then of course, Nimrod, ever so adaptable, he kind of puts himself back together bigger and badder. And then we see Magneto come in.
Oh yeah. Wow. And that's like the funny part of, you've got these machines going up against the master of magnetism.
Right, yep. And
how exactly is that going to work? And I think my favorite moment of all of this is shortly after that, where Charles is like, Magneto, Moira's not here, and the building is empty.
Yeah.
Do it. And he just drops like this massive cylinder. Like, it looks like a big smoke tower almost. Just right through the ceiling, down on top of Nimrod and Omega Sentinel. And of course, they bounce back because they have the ability to do that. But yeah, the sheer epicness of this battle and the coloring throughout the whole thing and the stress in their faces and the various panels and just the sheer emotion, and just, it was so dramatic.
Right.
And it's exactly what you want in this huge conclusion.
Well, it was so dramatic, and you see, like, all four of them get off kind of their best shots.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, we've been building to this epic battle between, essentially, Charles and Eric and Omega and Nimrod, really. You know, if you think about it, the main characters we've kind of seen leading the two factions, essentially. And you see all of them have their moment of doing something pretty epic to essentially end one of the others, and then it keeps going, you know, and Nimrod ultimately has Xavier like palming his head like a basketball, kind of crushing him, and everything, like you said, is getting desperate and the tensions are rising, and like,
yeah,
Nimrod and Magneto are literally like negotiating for the future of all of this, and neither of them back down, you know. And ultimately, you know, it kind of went a different way. I thought that was going to be the moment where we got like a real change in the narrative on
right
what the future was going to look like, because everything's been to the point, you know, the mutants are going to lose. Then we get this line that the mutants always win. So I thought this was going to be the moment that changed it to the mutants always winning. Like, they're going to destroy Nimrod here or something along those lines.
Yeah.
But then it like immediately goes the other way.
Yeah.
And Sentinel and Nimrod kill Eric and Charles. And you're just like, whoa. Not the first time they've died, but like,
oh,
in this
yeah.
context, it seemed a little bit more impactful.
Well, and it's super cool the way it builds and plays out, because it makes you forget that the resurrection protocols still exist. Like for that moment that happens, you're like, oh my God, Xavier and Magneto are dead. Like, you forget that the resurrection protocols are there and they're going to be fine. And that literally the very first scene in Inferno number one is Emma bringing them back.
Right. Yeah. They showed it to us at the very beginning.
Yeah. Like, you forget all of that's happened.
Yeah.
And you're like, what is going to play out here?
Well, it was masterful storytelling, because you don't know 100%. I don't think, at least in the very first issue of Inferno, that that's Charles and Xavier. You just know that Emma's bringing somebody back. I don't think I took it as, you know, 100% it was them. I just thought it was more noteworthy that it wasn't Charles that was bringing somebody back, I guess.
Oh.
But looking back on it, you're right. And I guess if you were to look at, like, the character design, the bald and the hair, it probably would have made more sense, you know, looking back on it.
Oh, yeah.
But to your point about it, you forgetting about it, I think that that was just kind of the storytelling, because for me, the question about whether they would be resurrected or not was just all in the fact that, like, the other alliances have been destroyed. So, you know, there was all this tension, right? So, like, if they go, would the council even have to bring them back? Would they want to bring them back?
Right.
You know, I thought that there were some other questions there, whereas before it was pretty much like, no, mutant dies, we're going to bring you back.
Yeah, yeah. See, and I think I had it, I remember her saying, like, what is it you like to say in these times, Charles, to me, my X-Men?
Oh, yeah. Actually, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, she, that was, yeah. I don't think I.
Oh, I totally forgot. Like I said,
yeah,
I outright
focus on other things.
Forgot, but yeah, it was crazy. And then it all shifts, like, because like you said, like, you think that this is the climax of the book, and it's really not, because this all goes down, Omega Sentinel Nimrod win this battle,
right,
and leave. But the true ending is actually with Mystique, Destiny, and them trying to kill Moira and the X-Factor, oh my boy Cypher, one of the most unassuming mutants, probably in his entire publication history. People look at his mutant ability to just translate any language and think, how useful can that be? And boy, oh boy, does his history of watching people screw over mutants come into play here, because he just doesn't trust anyone. He plants his own seeds to get his own information, and he uses it to his advantage.
Yeah, it was a very Varys from Game of Thrones kind of moment.
Yeah.
Super unassuming, but he knows everything.
Yeah.
He traffics in the most valuable commodity, which is information, and nobody knows that he's got it.
Yeah.
And so that was super cool. Unexpected, completely shows up right there, like you said, in the most important moment where Mystique and Destiny are trying to wipe Moira from the earth. And not only that, but it was so good because Mystique and all her hubris is just like, I can kill you in a heartbeat, Doug. Like, what, you little boy, you need to turn around and leave. And then his wife, Bay, shows up. And he's like, yeah, you might be able to kill me, but, like, Bay's pretty good here, you know?
Oh, yeah. He has two really good lines in that whole sequence. The first being, I've been listening this whole time and probably longer than anybody realizes.
Yeah, yeah.
Because that dates back to him planting the seeds with Warlock and Krakoa to know about Moira's holding cell and to know about all the whispers of the council. And then his other one is like, it cracks me up when Bay shows up and he's like, it's always difficult to find you're not the baddest person in the room.
Oh, yeah.
You're not the baddest person in the room. And it's like, that is awesome, because Bay is pretty badass. And so Mystique kind of, you know, flexing herself a little bit, like, who are you, with her little scalpel in her hand. And then Bay being like, yeah, my wife is a badass.
Yeah, I don't lose, like, Bay, because that's pretty much how Bay was built in the X of Swords, was that she just doesn't lose sword fights, you know? Like,
yeah, she's, like, never lost, right?
Right.
She's one that is never lost.
Yeah. Yeah, it was pretty funny. And then, of course, you had it kind of in the background there was Destiny, who can see all possible futures. You know, she's, like, calling out, like, I don't know, Mystique, like, I can't see exactly, like, there's a blank spot here, we don't know who's gonna do what, And so, yeah, it was a lot of really tense moments that kept you right on the edge and just flipping the pages, just reading. And I thought that it was really good. It definitely sets up for a lot, you know, in the future. But, like, ultimately, I will say it's like a love-hate relationship I've had with these little mini series throughout the Dawn of X era, or whatever, the Hickman era, because for the most part, they have been written at a higher level than all of the other issues. And I'm sure some of it's like a chicken and an egg situation, right? Where, like, maybe these are only so good because we had to go through all these other issues, or maybe the other issues are, what, you know what I mean? Like, it goes back and forth.
Yeah. Is it the journey or the destination?
The journey or the destination, exactly. But it's like, it just, I just kept back to it. I'm like, God, I was like, I just want a nonstop title that is written at the level that Hox and Pox was, and X of Swords, and Inferno now. Like, if we could just have, like, one...
Oh, yeah.
Like, year-long, every month, you know, publication that is at that level of storytelling with the X-Men, like, you could take all my money all the time.
Yeah.
And so I just kept coming back to that. I was like, oh, I was like, this is what's been so great about it. But we also have had to go through, you know, 2 years and 12 other titles and, you know, the whole nine yards of some ups and downs, you know, as far as how good it was.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And I think we'll get to there's a piece, a Hickman quote that I think we'll get to here in the third part of this chapter that'll frame your thinking on that and how and why we got to where we got and how it's playing out.
But all in all, I thought it did work. It was a pretty good little bow on the storytelling and what Hickman's done. You know, I really didn't have any complaints from that standpoint. I think that if you've been following the Hickman era, you know, at all, whether it's one issue or all the issues, you know, all the titles, then it's definitely worth the read.
Oh, yeah.
Because it does kind of give you that bookend there. And now, you know, we can see what's going to come in the future.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, even if you only read House of X and Powers of 10, like, you could probably skip the Dawn and Reign era and then read Inferno and be good to go. We should kind of, like, I think, describe what all happens there at the end. Because Destiny says, like, we're at a nexus point.
Right.
When Cypher shows up and decisions have to be made. And basically, Destiny and Mystique have to let Moira go. She's on the run now. They set up the fact that she will be chased. She will be hunted for the rest of her life because that's just what Destiny and Mystique are going to do. They all get to return back to the Council because of this choice of to not kill her, because killing her would have broken one of the main three laws of the land. So it's a nice way of like, man, we built, gave you an awesome ending, but without actually giving you an ending.
Right,
it was pretty remarkable storytelling to be able to do that, to say, yep, Moira lives, like everybody lived.
Right, true, yeah.
But it still felt like a really good conclusion.
Yeah, that is true. And then, of course, you know, that last little bit would just, we see the Quiet Council coming back together. It's fully formed. They've got all the seats. You know, everybody knows they kind of crossed each other a little bit. There's still tensions, but I think that they also know that they've got to still work together for the good of the mutant cause and their people. And it was interesting because it was like one of those where you know, it was almost like they were stronger than they have been in the last, you know, year or so of storytelling, maybe since the beginning of Krakoa. But then you also were like, is it more fragile?
Yeah.
You know, it was almost like that double-edged sword of being both at the same time somehow.
Yeah. Like somehow all working together towards a single goal, but yet still clawing at each other to be at the top of all of this. And I did. I liked that final shot that was kind of like a drop down of the Quiet Council circle, all 12 of them sitting around and the new seats being filled, like in the various seasons and what they look like. I thought it was, you know, with Destiny taking Apocalypse's seat.
Right. Yes.
I thought it was a very powerful image that row of characters was Xavier, Magneto, Destiny.
Putting them right in line with each other after being so at odds for, you know, the last number of years.
Yeah, and I think it absolutely elevates Destiny as a mutant and her role in this culture, in this country, that before that seat was held by Apocalypse, and everybody knows Apocalypse and how strong he was. And he was one of the pillars of mutant kind, for good or for bad, and now Destiny is standing in place of that pillar. So, you know, and as a precog, what will she be able to do?
It's that damn old comic adage, you know, where they give you just enough, you know, and just when you think that you might be kind of stepping away from certain lines, certain books, they do just enough to be like, ah, no, you might have to pick up, you know, keep reading X-Men. You might have to pick up The Immortal. You might have to pick up, you know, and it's just like, I'm going to be sucked into buying X-Men comics for the next, you know, 10 years of my life.
Oh, yeah. It's the good and the bad of the superhero comic of like, it's got to stay, you know, you can't truly kill anybody off. But I do agree that the future looks really, really good. And we're going to take a look at that future after a quick break. Opinions about the show covered in today's chapter, or maybe you just want to interact with Chris and Kyle about all things geek. Possibly you have a favorite game or comic you think the guys should cover. Be sure to follow the show on Facebook and YouTube at Geek Ketchup Podcast, or on Instagram and Twitter at Geek Ketchup Pod. We look forward to hearing from you.
Before we wrap up here, we want to take a few moments to talk about how the changes going on with the X-Men creative team and various X titles are changing the landscape. Additionally, this also means that Kyle and I are taking an inward look at how we want to approach our coverage of these stories moving forward. So Kyle, why don't you share what you know about what's going on with the X-Men at Marvel?
So there are a ton of new lines, with Hickman leaving in unexpected fashion. They basically had to pivot. And what I'll say here, I mentioned it before, we have this quote from Hickman and kind of like why he's leaving writing duties. So we should point out he's not leaving Marvel and he's not necessarily leaving the X-Men and how he's just leaving how he deals. He's no longer going to be directly writing. And he said in one point in so many words, like, Marvel doesn't pay me to write these ongoing monthlies. Marvel pays me to develop large scale, just universe impacting moments. And I was like, okay, that's a really good way to look at it, because he also said, quote, when I first pitched the X-Men story, I wanted to do a very big, very broad three act, three event narrative. And then also said that during that time, he didn't know how long the first act was going to last. And what ended up happening, coming out of House of X Powers of 10, is the writers that took on these books that you and I've been reading and chronicling just started to really dig deep into this new status quo of Krakoa and what it could mean for the Marvel Universe. And it got blown up way more than he ever expected. You know, it found success in ways that I don't think even he intended for it to find success. And they had to pivot. And so it was this weird thing where, like, his original plan was to do a hard end and reset and maybe have the Krakoan era end. But the writers and the creative teams were going in all these interesting directions and taking the characters in places we've never seen. They just couldn't get away from it. And I'm very thankful for that.
Yeah.
Because that's something you and I talked about. When they started to announce these changes in the lines, we were like, oh my gosh, if they do away with the Krakoan era, I'm going to be so heartbroken, because this has just been so interesting and so new and fresh for, you know, mutant kind. I don't want to abandon it, you know?
Yep. Yeah, I totally agree there. And I think one of the things that we said, too, is that it was such a big, impactful storyline for the world of comics, like being a part of that, too. You know, you didn't want it to just be wasted time.
Exactly.
You know, like, it really did feel like they created something here to your, like what you just said, that not only impacted the world of the X-Men in very important ways, but the actual entire Marvel comic universe.
Oh, yeah. And Hickman said as much, where he was like, when he first set out to do this, it was just going to be this three-act story. And then something, you know, and I'm paraphrasing, quoting here somewhat, it resonated more deeply and worked out more like Giant Size X-Men did back in the day, where it represented a paradigm shift
right
to the Marvel Universe. And so he didn't want to kill it. It was this just creative boom that they wanted to do. And so he did want to leave and go do other things. He's got stuff going on with Substack. He's got other books happening. But he did need to step away from the ongoing monthly writing duties. So they concluded it with Inferno, and they're going to shift using X Lives of Wolverine and X Deaths of Wolverine into this new era, which is known as the Destiny of X. And there's a whole line, just like when we came out of House of X, Powers of 10, there was a whole new line and we had to pick what we were going to read. So I'm going to run down the list of all the titles that are either going to straight keep continuing or kind of go through a soft reboot or brand new titles in general. The first one is there's going to be a one-shot giant size X-Men Thunderbird.
Ooh.
Because we saw John Proudstar return. You know, he got brought back on the Resurrection Protocols. That one should be pretty cool because Nyla Rose is actually guest spot writing on that one.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Nice little crossover of interest there. That's super cool.
Yeah, AEW wrestler Nyla Rose, which is pretty cool. Then there's going to be, getting into the list here, Immortal X-Men, Knights of X, Legion of X, Marauders, New Mutants, Sabretooth, Wolverine, Wolverine Patch, Excellent, X-Force, X-Men, X-Men 92, and X-Men Red.
Ooh, that's a lot.
So many comics. And they're all telling very unique stories, whether it's going to be of the X-Men team, or with the happenings on Mars, the inner happenings of the Quiet Council, all are very different. So I was going to let you pick one of the titles, and then maybe we dive into that. Or do you want me to kind of brief them all?
No, I don't know if we need to go into every single one of them. I think that the one that's got me most interested in is Immortal X-Men. And I'll give a little quick of a shout out to X-Men 92, just because that's nostalgic, right? I think there's going to be some interesting stuff there to maybe pick up at least a couple issues of just to check out. But I think Immortal X-Men might be the one that's got me most interested, primarily because, as we've talked about, it's going to be done by Kieran Gillen. And, you know, everybody knows that we're big fans of his work.
Yeah, absolutely. And that one, another, before we get into that, a quick X-Men 92 is going to be the Krakoan culture, but placed in the 92 animated series.
Exactly.
And I'll tell you, it's a 5-issue mini. So it's
not a
big commitment for you. Not
even
a big
better.
Commitment.
Yeah, no, it just seemed like as soon as I saw recently that they were going to do some of the Hox Pox type storylines, but in that 92 nostalgic feel, I was like, I'm in.
Yeah.
I was like, I was already in, and now I'm double in.
Yeah.
Let's get this party going.
But Immortal, you know, is written by Kieran Gillen. The art's going to be by Lucas Vernec, who did the art for Trial of Magneto. And it's really going to focus on the Quiet Council and the new dynamics of this 12-member group. And like we said, working towards one goal of a mutant future, but all clawing at each other to who is going to lead that mutant future.
Yeah, and I'm pretty pumped about that because I do like the idea of it being Quiet Council focused. So I expect maybe a little more politics,
mm-hmm.
a little bit more, you know, of the treachery and that interpersonal stuff that goes on as the power dynamics shift. So I think that is right up my alley.
Yeah, and seeing what Gillen did with Die and all the various pieces of Die that we just gush over. And if you have time, go back and check out our Die chapters because you'll see how much we gush over that book. You do believe that, you know, he's going to come out strong and do really, really well with it. The other one I wanted to shout out, because I don't know if you looked it up, but you were desperate to find out what happens to Betsy.
Right, yeah.
Betsy's story will be continued in Knights of X.
Yeah, I did see that they have promoted that. I didn't look into it too much. You know, I wasn't sure if it was going to be real close to, like, the Excalibur team and everything that's gone there, with just maybe some tweaks or whatnot. But it's going to be hard for me to not pick up at least the first couple of issues of that, simply because I do need to know what happened to Betsy Braddock.
Oh, yeah. And I fully expect it to be a continuation because it's written by Teenie Howard, art's done by Bob Quinn, and from the cover previews, at least, it's Betsy, Gambit, Jubilee's there. And I'm like, okay, that was a lot of the
perfect.
Core team
yeah.
That was right there in the Citadel and Saturnine and stuff like that.
Yeah, I think that'll be worth checking out at least, you know, maybe the first six, just to see if it kind of puts a bow on everything that I've been reading through Excalibur, maybe wraps that up, gives me some closure, you know, and then maybe I could back it off a little bit. But There's a ton of books. I mean, that's the challenge with what they've been doing, is that there's so many good stories, so many good characters. The Sabretooth in there, I told you I was going to pick that up since it's a 5-issue mini, just to see what's going on there with the villain look. But he's also been down in that void. You know, we haven't had much view into the void, so there's hopefully some questions that are going to be answered from just that little mini series. And there's just a lot that, you know, you're never going to be able to fully get away from this as long as they're sticking with this Krakoa theme.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I'd say it all the time. Like, I need to find ways to cut X books out of my list, but they'd find ways to continue to work them in and make them look interesting, because X-Men Red is out there as well. That's going to follow Storm and the happenings on Mars. She's the new leader of Mars.
Yeah.
And how is that going to work out? And I know Vulcan's coming back for that book. And, you know, that he's an Omega level mutant. So what is that going to look like? Because I like Storm. I like everything they've done on Mars with the Iraqi mutants. Like, it's just too much. And obviously, I think the main X-Men story is going to continue on, because that, if issue 6 is any indication, we're about to get a heavy Cyclops story.
Yeah.
So I gotta stick
with a new character, though. It's like, it's Cyclops, but it's also like a whole brand new character in a way. So that's super exciting.
Well, and I think there could be an interesting dynamic with that one, because Cyclops has always been, you know, somewhat the face of the X-Men. He's been the leader. And now what happens when he, you know, can't revel in the glory of this team that he has created?
Yeah, he's got to be a different person.
Yeah. And like, yeah, there are different sets of Scott Summers that can be arrogant, and so maybe he wants the ego boost that comes with being the face of the X-Men. How's it going to be when he has to run around as Captain Krakoa? So there's a lot of dynamics you just don't know. And I will say, I currently read Marauders, and I read Way of X, and Way of X is going to be continued in Legion of X. So they're going to dive into the interpersonal problems amongst the Krakoan culture. I don't think I'm going to stick with Legion. Maybe a trade one day. The Marauders team got completely shaken up. Kate Pryde and Bishop are still there, but a lot of the other people that I enjoyed on that book, like Emma Frost and Pyro and Iceman, they're all going to be leaving and doing something else. So it's going to be a whole new team. And so while some of the dynamics are still interesting, I don't think I'm going to continue to read Marauders, because, like I said, I'm looking to find ways to cut X-Men. And this seems like a good time to cut ties with Marauders and maybe X-Force as well.
Yeah, it's definitely going to be a shift to a couple different X-books. You know, we'll see how things go. I think that's kind of a perfect segue here into one of our last things to touch on, which is really how we are going to approach the X-Men comics here moving forward. You know, we've been chronicling everything that's been going on in the Dawn of X era for, gosh, what, 2.5, almost 3 years now?
It's our first chapter. Chapter one was House of X, Powers of Ten. And so since literally day one.
Right. And so I know we've been talking a lot, and we still got to figure out exactly what we're going to do. But maybe, even though we're going to continue reading X-Men comics ourselves, but maybe not putting such the emphasis on the X-Men as we have with the show, maybe even finding some different comic options, or, you know, different publisher, different storylines to be a little bit closer following and talking about, just to shake it up a little bit on our own side, right? But, you know, I'm sure we'll still pepper in X-Men stuff. We're definitely not going to not talk about the X-Men in some fashion, but we have been talking about maybe shaking it up on our side since Marvel is shaking it up a little bit on their side.
Yeah, this whole conclusion of Dawn of X, Reign of X into Destiny of X is really given us the opportunity to break out, chronicle something different, read other books. Like you said, we are lifelong X-Men fans and lifelong, you know, mutant fans. So in no way are we going to stop reading.
Right.
But, you know, maybe no longer dedicate whole chapters to the X-Men and the happenings on Krakoa.
Yeah, unless something massive, massive happens that we can't ignore, right? You know, we always can come back, but definitely just wanted to share a little bit of that, because if you've been following with us, like Kyle said, since chapter one, you've seen that it's probably been the most consistent topic that we've talked about has been everything going on with the X-Men here. But, you know, there's a lot of great comics out there. So time to kind of pop the head out of the sand and take a look around the landscape and see what other interesting stuff is that we can bring to the listeners.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I actually did commit. I was really looking at this list and what do I get now? What do I want to get in the future? And thinking about, you know, Geek Ketchup. And I actually do think I'm going to cut all X-Men titles with the exception of just X-Men.
Ooh, go bare bones for a little bit.
Yeah, I see. But I read far too many other comics, so that is also playing into I need to make cuts on my overall comic list because it's gotten a little out of control. So, and unfortunately, you know, cuts have to be made, and I'm really sorry. It's not to say that it hasn't been good, and I don't believe that it's still going to be good, but some of this stuff has to get backseated and go into trade form.
Yeah, you know, it's goodbye for now, not goodbye forever.
Exactly, exactly. So we'll see where all of these new series take Mutant Kind and take us.
Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed this discussion, go ahead and smash the subscribe button so you never miss a chapter of Geek Ketchup, and leave us a review on your favorite podcast platform. Also, be sure to follow GK on social media. You can find links to all of our accounts on the show notes below and on our website, geekketchuppodcast.com. There's even links to our merch store and Patreon if you'd like to support the show. But as always, remember to stay saucy, you nerds.